The Drives podcast is presented by Disability Advantage Group. Need help applying for Social Security, disability benefits? One call does it all. Call Disability Advantage Group at 865-566-0800 or visit dag-us.com.
You're listening to East Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
Yeah, I love Tennessee. I got a lot of orange blood in my body.
Hour number two of The Drive underway here on Fox Sports Knoxville. It is Fan Run Radio. Pleased to be joined by friend of the show, Logan Booker, 960 The Ref in Athens, GA, at Logan M. Booker on Twitter. Hello, Logan. Good afternoon, sir.
Russell, what's happening, man? I'm just counting the days down to join you guys on Vol Navy again this fall. I'm glad it's a year we go up there, so it'll be here before we know it.
It might be the last time you get to come up here for a fall game. It sounds like you'll be coming in the beginning of winter starting in 2020.
Right. Yeah, I shot you a message yesterday. Of course, your listeners are well aware that the schedule shift happening, that Georgia and Auburn have agreed to play earlier in the season. And I had to shoot you a message yesterday. I said, listen, when you think of games in Neyland Stadium in mid-November, do you think more fall or winter? Because I absolutely love coming up there to Knoxville every couple of years. But what I like about it is that we come up there in the fall. So my question to you now is, when I come there mid-November, do I need to bring my heavy coat or sort of just some fall like light jacket? What do I need to expect now?
Man, I wish I could tell you, Logan, but the honest answer is it's a crapshoot, because I've been to games. Usually we play Kentucky about the time you're talking about, and I've been to Kentucky games in Neyland Stadium where it's okay. Like, you might need a sweater or a jacket or something. And I've also been to those games, man, where you will freeze to the bone. So,
and that's the same thing here. I think I've got a couple different memories recently, actually, when Auburn was here, that it's, I think the coldest game in Sanford Stadium history happened in 2014, and that was when Auburn came down here. It was actually Todd Gurley's final game. He tore his ACL. Is one thing I remember stands out from that game. But that's something you guys need to prepare for as well, is coming down to Georgia much later, just like you said, crapshoot. It could be very nice in November, or there are days where you better bring a couple different layers, because it's going to be a whole new realm when we start getting together. I guess 2020 is when this whole thing goes down.
Well, I'm old enough, Logan, to remember when Tennessee and Georgia used to open this season together. A couple of years in the 80s.
Yeah, been a while since then, obviously. So I guess you're revealing a little bit too much about your age there, Russell. But but I guess what are you guys' thoughts? I mean, I'll tell you right off the bat here. Down here, Georgia fans aren't talking at all about what this does to Georgia and Tennessee, but I think 95% of the fan base that I've gauged are livid. I mean, they seem very upset that Georgia's changing the traditional November game with Auburn. People will get over it, is my best advice, but then there's nothing you can do about it. It's just going to have to organically play out and see what happens, but I guess the way it affects us is just that story's yet to be written, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised, because I didn't even really know that this was something that was being talked about behind closed doors. And, you know, I didn't know that Georgia, and I guess maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, is Auburn the driving force? Is basically they want to split up the Georgia and the Alabama games, the two hard opponents?
It seems that way, correct. But this is something that Kirby Smart, about a year ago in some casual conversation, it did come up that he would like to also shuffle in some way, shape, or fashion the Georgia-Auburn meeting, and when that happens. A little backstory for Tennessee fans that may not be in complete tune with how this all started. Back when the league expanded in 2012, when Missouri and A&M joined the league, a couple different teams, I know Georgia was one of them, Georgia-Auburn, I want to say Ole Miss, I'm going to have to look that up, but anyway, Georgia played Auburn on even years in Auburn, and to correct whatever glitch they wanted in the schedule, Georgia and Auburn agreed that Georgia would go to Auburn in back-to-back years, and that was 2012 and 2013, and that sort of shuffled what years that Georgia and Auburn would play going forward. That created a situation now where Auburn plays Georgia and Alabama on the road or at home in the same season. It also created a situation where Georgia would play Auburn and Georgia Tech, same situation, on the road or at home in the same season. So Kirby Smart has made it the last couple of years that he wasn't a big fan of those years that we would have to travel to Auburn and then a couple weeks later travel to Atlanta, even though that really is just up the road. It's still another road trip. And then Gus Malzahn, I think, as to your point, the big driving force, Gus has been extremely vocal that he is not happy at all the way that it shook out. Now, why these teams agreed back in 2012 and 13 to do this in the first place, that's the question that no one really has a good answer to, is how did this come up to begin with? Why did they agree when the SEC asked them to do this that, yeah, let's go ahead and do this? But now what it is, and listen, you guys in Tennessee, you know this as well as anybody because you're playing Alabama every single year. It's not fun playing those guys right now. And Auburn has to play those guys within a two-week stretch of playing Georgia. Now, sometimes it worked out really well for those guys. 2017, Georgia went in ranked number one to Auburn. Auburn beat the crap out of Georgia. A couple weeks later, Auburn found a way to beat Alabama. Then look at last year where Auburn came to Georgia, got their butts kicked in Sanford Stadium. Then a couple weeks later, they had to go on the road in Auburn. I mean, Alabama just had their way Alabama had its way with Auburn. So every other year is just sort of a bad situation for Georgia and or Auburn. And I guess they convinced Greg Sankey and the SEC to shuffle some things around to, at minimum, just space that thing out a little bit. So now a lot of the traditional matchups and when those will be played got shuffled. So that's how we got here, was the whole expansion in 2012. And now today, I think Georgia, Auburn, other programs are being affected with by it still.
No, you asked if, you know, what the Tennessee fans' perspective of it is, and I think, you know, Southern college football fans sometimes a little hesitant to embrace change, I understand. But I do think the, you know, after you get over the initial shock of it, I think most Tennessee fans are okay with it, because for us, Logan, it breaks up. You talk about the changes that happened in 2012. Since then, Tennessee has always just had a brutal month of October that has included, you know, Tennessee will usually play Florida, Georgia, an SEC Western opponent, and then Alabama four consecutive weeks right in the middle of the season. And I think that, you know, I think if Fulmer had his druthers, he'd move the Florida game. That's been talked about here for many years, but I think he sees an opportunity here. Hey, there's some traction here. Georgia and Auburn are open to this. If Georgia's the game we got to move, then so be it. Just to lighten up the schedule a little bit so that the Vols don't have to go through that murderer's row.
Yeah, I think that works out. Actually, the way you put it there, I think it works out pretty well for Tennessee. And listen, I think in the near future, listen, everybody outside of Knoxville, we see what's happening at Tennessee. I think Tennessee has been sort of as low as Tennessee could be over the last 5, 6, or 7 year sample. We all are very well aware that Tennessee is only going to get better and better. I personally, and I've talked about this on your show before, I am a believer in Jeremy Pruitt and what he can do in a coaching capacity. That being said, I think Tennessee is 1 or 2, maybe 3 years at the most from being back into a very significant SEC caliber or within the conversation of possibly winning the SEC. So putting Tennessee and Georgia now in that late or mid-November slot, just everybody out there, close your eyes and think about this for a second, that Georgia and Tennessee could possibly yearly be playing the last SEC game of the season. At least it will be for Georgia, and everything could be on the line. I personally, selfishly, Russell, I love cold weather football. I love putting on a heavy jacket, going to the game, having that big-time atmosphere, which honestly, I think that's one thing that I've missed a lot over the last several handful of seasons, is that Georgia-Tennessee has not felt like the Georgia-Tennessee I'm used to, and that's a product of Tennessee that has been down. But I think in the near future, this late November game, it's going to take on an entire different meaning that I don't think fans of either one of these programs are accustomed to. So for that reason alone, you know, Auburn aside, I'm one of the few Georgia fans down here, folks that are in the Georgia media, that are pointing this out, that say, my goodness, look at this late November scheduling all of a sudden. I see a lot of fun in that, Russell. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
It looks like the schedule I saw that could be Tennessee's 2020 schedule would be a non-conference game the first week of November at Georgia, Kentucky at home, and at Vanderbilt. So we would still have Kentucky and Vanderbilt afterwards. That's been Tennessee's traditional ending. But, I mean, it's different for Tennessee. You know, you guys end with Georgia Tech, who, you know, gives you all you want, you know, it seems like every other year at least. And Auburn ends with, Georgia and Alabama. So it's Tennessee's schedule has traditionally been heavily front-loaded. And November has just been a little bit easier. But I think that it'll be interesting, you know, if Tennessee can get back, as you're talking about, as certainly our audience hopes they will, then, yeah, I mean, that could take the Tennessee-Georgia rivalry to a whole nother level if that ends up being a huge game every November.
Yeah, and that's what we talked about a lot on our shows this morning, that late November could get epic. And another thing that this helps for Georgia fans and the way we travel down here, traditionally, now this coming season, a lot of shuffling in the schedule happened, namely because Notre Dame will be coming to Athens late September. So Georgia's actually opening this coming fall Labor Day at Vanderbilt, that road trip to Nashville. But usually every other year, the years that Georgia does travel to Tennessee, it's always happened where it's back-to-back weeks where it'll be Nashville and then Knoxville or vice versa. So having back-to-back trips going from Georgia up into Tennessee, it was sort of a toll, not only for players, but for fans that do travel to every single game. That was sort of one of those weird caveats that Georgia fans had to deal with. Now, this completely will break that up, assuming that after this season or going forward that Vanderbilt will fall back into that late September, early October role. So that's another thing this is benefiting for Georgia. But the conversation down here, like I said, it really, truly is a lot of people upset because that Georgia-Auburn game, the Deep South oldest rivalry, as it's dubbed, has always been in November. I think they've faced each other like 144 times, and I think 95% of those have been played late in the season in November. So that's the big conversation going on down here, and that is going to be a whole new beast for Georgia. I personally think it adds a little bit of spice to that midseason schedule, which at times can get a little flat because that's usually where Georgia will find Vanderbilt and Missouri, and oftentimes there'll be one of the cupcake games thrown in there also. There can be a really, for lack of a better term, just boring stretch for Georgia every couple of years, but this completely takes that off the table now that you will have Auburn coming to Athens and Georgia going to Auburn every other year. Again, I think Georgia fans will get over it. I think that and listen, I've had this sort of mindset that people complain about anything and everything on social media every chance they get, and this is just one of those chances to do it. I understand why they're upset. But I think when this thing plays out in 5-6 years from now, hopefully you and I are still having conversations on the radio together, I think Georgia fans will be very happy with how this does shake out for the reasons that we've talked about.
Logan Booker with us, 960 The Ref, WGAU, down in Athens, at Logan M. Booker on Twitter. And speaking of football, Tennessee and Georgia, I like how Tennessee and Georgia executed the rare player trade this year with we send you Eli Wolf, tight end, and D'Angelo Gibbs coming from Athens to Knoxville in return. You and I have corresponded a little bit about that over Twitter. What kind of player, the background story, D'Angelo Gibbs shrouded in mystery. It sounds like he certainly was a highly touted recruit and a lot of athleticism there, but maybe some off the field character type concerns with him coming in. What kind of player are we getting in D'Angelo Gibbs?
Yeah, I think you worded it perfectly there, kind of shrouded in mystery. We don't know much about D'Angelo Gibbs other than I can tell you he was one of the better high school football players I have ever seen play, especially in the state of Georgia. He went to Grayson High School, which is right outside of Atlanta. You may know Owen Papo, that signed with Auburn, went to Grayson.
Yeah, Wanye Morris.
One of your guys.
Too.
Who's the
Wanye?
The offensive lineman.
Yeah, Wanye Morris.
Morris, correct. So this guy is an outstanding player, but it seemed like he never could get out of his own way the time that he was at Georgia. I don't want to speculate exactly what was going on because I don't have facts to back it up, But it sounds like he just could not stay in the good graces of coaches for whatever reason or another. Got suspended multiple times. But as I told you in our correspondence, if this kid can get it together and realize the opportunity that he has, and I guess in this case he's getting a second opportunity by going to a very good program, an SEC program at Tennessee. If he can get it together, then I think Tennessee fans should be very excited. He was a five-star safety/ just secondary player that picked Georgia over Alabama in a very, very hotly contested recruitment. So I do wish him the best. I always want to see a success story out of anybody that may have gone through troubled times. But to answer your question, if he can get it together, Tennessee fans should be excited about somebody that I think could contribute right away, possibly this 2019 season, if he doesn't have to sit out.
All right, very good. And last thing for you, Logan, we'll let you run here. Be honest. We'll put you up to the truth detector here on the drive. Are you the one who threw the stuffed animal onto the floor last night at the Georgia game?
I wish I could say I was, just to put that entire story to bed. What a bizarre thing. I have seen a lot of just really dumb ways to lose a basketball game, and that one absolutely takes the cake. Those little things, by the way, they're called beanie dogs. It's just a little stuffed Ugga. The promotions team, they toss them into the stands for pretty much every sporting event we have. And there's pictures floating around. I cannot confirm who did it or why they did it, but let's just say if the university gets a hold of them, they're probably going to be banned from events for quite a while now. But I'll say this, at least that didn't keep Georgia out of a tournament, because the way our season is going, I think we can all kind of sit back and laugh at it as opposed to maybe costing us something big in the long run. But what a bizarre situation.
No doubt about it. Logan, always appreciate your time, my man. Thanks for joining us, and I'm sure we'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. Y'all have a good one.
All right, Logan Booker making his presence felt this afternoon on the drive. Bear, what did you learn?
Georgia fans don't like the switch.
That's kind of weird, isn't it?
That they don't like it? Or that the switch is weird?
I guess it isn't weird that they don't like it, because I'm a little – I love the history and tradition of college football too. And part of that is Georgia and Auburn playing right there at the end of the season. Like, that's a cool matchup. When I think of that rivalry, I think of a gray fall afternoon, right? And those two colors going at it. And to see them playing in September or early October in a hot weather game is –
We're just flipping them out for us.
It's hard to wrap my head around.
I am really looking forward to them coming up here when it's like slate gray sky, 34 degrees, wind whipping off the river about 15, 20 miles an hour. So it feels like it's like 25 in there.
I was thinking, like, are the climate, is it that different down there and up here? I know we're in a unique spot with the valley and everything, but I don't feel like it's necessary.
It can get a lot colder here in November.
It feels like it gets colder here a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Like right now, it's probably about the same, but it feels like winter, the cold weather gets here probably, I don't know. I'm not from Georgia. What am I talking about? Like, I have any clue what I'm talking about, what the weather is down there.
We get
just spitballing here.
We get friend of the show, Ella Dorsey.
Oh, yeah.
They're about 10 degrees warmer right now.
Down there in the equatorial region of Athens, Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, they're significantly warmer.
It'll be like us going up to Kentucky.
Yeah, you know how it can be brutal up there? Yeah. Or like Missouri.
Oh, yeah. Well, that'll be good for us. We won't have to make that trip in the winter anymore.
No.
That could be an added benefit, too. Everybody's talking about the Georgia game, like not having to go to Columbia, Missouri. People I know have made that trip and said, like,
it's miserable.
Just awful. And like 30 degrees out there with the wind on the plains.
I'd really like to get the Gators up here when it's cold, though.
Yeah.
Whew.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen, but.
Remember how much fun that 2001 game was when we had the whole rest of the season look forward to it? Kind of brought me out of a little bit of the funk from a little bit from 9/11.
Yeah, it was.
Of course, it didn't hurt that we ran wild on them.
It didn't hurt that we had John Henderson and Albert Hainsworth and Will Overstreet on our defensive line.
Travis Stevens and then Eddie Moore from South Pittsburgh, who – I mean, did that kid from Florida ever play a meaningful
Kelvin
snap?
Kite. Got his face busted in.
You think he still looks over his shoulder?
If that hit happened today, they'd just go ahead and throw Eddie Moore out for two games.
You think he targeted him?
Maybe a little bit. I don't know.
I mean, he caught the ball and turned around, and then Eddie was just there.
Stay with us.
Making Eddie out to be a bad guy, Russ.
The drive continues. Fox Sports Knoxville, your phone call is coming up, 865-546-8200. We'll be right back.
The Drive.
To the phones we go. Portions of the show today brought to you by our friends at Citizens National Bank. You check them out online at cnbtn.com. Apply local. Make that dream home your reality. Let CNB find the right mortgage loan for you with competitive rates and various term options. Citizens National Bank is right here in your community to help you finance a new home or refinance your existing home. Call today to speak to a loan officer at 865-453-9031 or just go online to cnbtn.com. It's Citizens National Bank. Phil is next on the drive. Hello, Phil.
Well, sorry, W.
What's up, Philly?
How you, Baron, Brandon?
Doing well, thanks.
So Jamie's sharpening that knife, huh?
I mean, was it ever really dull, Phil? I mean, it's sitting there in his drawer, in his sheath, by his side, just waiting to be taken out.
You know, honestly, I love Buck Pearl, but I really think our program is more stable under Rick Barnes than it was with Buck Pearl. Because Buck Pearl had all these detractors and the media didn't like him, and the NCAA didn't like him either.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I mean, it's built to last, I think, Phil. I mean, I just, you know, I hope he can keep it rolling and get to the top of that mountain before he decides to hang it up.
Did you see where Barnes was in with Kessler yesterday?
I did not see that. He had a visit with him?
Yeah, and then that Vanderbilt coach followed him, so that's even more funny. What five-star want to go there now?
I know, man. You got to think, you know, we set up pretty good right there, especially if the young man reclassifies. I mean, that would be huge. If we lose Grant and Kyle Alexander, you know, obviously we're going to struggle to replace a perhaps two-time defending SEC player of the year, but I'll take DJ Burns and Walker Kessler and take my chances, Phil.
Yeah, but if Grant stays and you bring Kessler in, and then you have the James kid coming in with returning backcourt, Tennessee looks like another top 10 team, probably even a stronger team than they were this year.
Oh, yeah. I am not anticipating this massive drop-off that some seem to think is inevitable for Rick Barnes next year.
And Rick Barnes, you look at the main sports at UT, outside of John Majors coming back, Rick Barnes is the basketball version of John Majors.
How so?
He's gone two or three places and one big.
Huh. Yeah, it's an interesting comparison. I don't think he has anybody he's got to worry about taking his job on his staff. not to throw a cheap shot out there or nothing.
Duke, it's like a house of cards, isn't it? One falls and then the whole thing falls apart.
I mean, it's – what did Butch Jones used to say? Winning is fragile.
It's critical.
It's – you lose that dude. I mean, yeah, it's going to be – you're not going to be very good, or you're not going to be nearly as good anymore without the best player in college basketball.
I admit the guy's a great player, but does Duke not play any, decide not to play no defense after that? I mean – North Carolina's had their way.
That was a sloppy game, man. How many times were there, you know, there would be a turnover and then the team would turn it right back over? Like, that happened three or four times in the second half of that game. It got a little sloppy there.
I still maintain the top three teams in the SEC are better than the top three teams in the ACC.
So it's Tennessee, Kentucky, and LSU? Against.
Well, whatever order you want to put them, I mean, I guess you put Williamson and Duke's probably better than any of them anyway, but I don't think North Carolina and Virginia are as good as they're advertised.
I mean, maybe it's just Zion being out, but North Carolina looked pretty formidable last night to me.
I don't think Duke's anywhere near the team they are. They are with Zion as opposed to without him, though. I mean, if they came in and played soft, you got to be a wise ass, Phil. Really?
Yeah.
It was a pretty astute analysis.
Well, Bear can do it. That's why he goes in hibernation sometimes, and you know that is. But playing Georgia in November, I like it. But we still have to beat Florida. Don't matter when you play Georgia. If you can't beat Florida, yeah. Don't matter.
I mean, it's, you know, maybe you have a chance to get back into it after a loss. It's, to me, it's just you won't have that demoralizing stretch. I mean, how many times the past 7 years has Tennessee come out of October just beaten, bruised, and battered? You know, it's I think it kind of cost us the South Carolina game this year. It's just when you get pantsed by Alabama at home, it's hard to turn around and just pick it up right again.
Well, if Fulmer was a great athletic director, he would end the play in Alabama every year.
Oh, he'll never do that, Phil.
Why won't he? I mean, until we quit doing it, we're going to continue to lose to him.
He's an old-school traditionalist. I don't disagree with you. I mean, I don't see Phil doing that.
And, Russ, you crying about playing Oklahoma? All these other teams we're playing aren't that good. I mean, if Pruitt gets our team back with anywhere near the top 15, Tennessee will be able to handle everybody but Oklahoma and all those teams you named off. And maybe by 24, we could compete with Oklahoma.
I guess so. I mean, it just seems like we've been saying that since. I remember when Fulmer got pushed out in 08, and we knew that Oregon was coming on the schedule. It's like, oh, by the time we get to that game, we'll be better, right? By the time we get to 2010, whenever that first game was, like, we'll be okay. We weren't. Oh, by the time Oklahoma comes on the schedule, we'll be better, right? No. 2024 will be good, right? I hope so.
If you got some extra time on your hands, W, go look at Tennessee's preferred walk-on list coming in. I think Jeremy Pruitt is doing a very good job of bringing some people in here that might eventually be on scholarship.
Yeah, it seems like every once or twice a week you see some guy, you know, that you're like, wait a minute, is this a scholarship player that's committing? Oh, no. But, you know, the size and the measurables and everything look good. And, I mean, that's a big part of it, Phil, is having good players to practice against during the week. So I think Fulmer had a good walk-on program, and hopefully Pruitt can get it back to what it used to be.
And hopefully this staff is a major upgrade from last year.
Yeah. Hopefully. Thank you, Phil. I don't think the staff was bad last year. I just think there was some chemistry issues, and I think Jim Chaney is obviously an upgrade over Tyson Helton. That's not saying anything bad about Tyson Helton. It's just Jim Chaney's been around this league for a long time and has done it. And the perception was, I don't know if this is the reality, but the perception was, and the rumors around town were, that Jeremy Pruitt just ran all over Tyson Helton and wouldn't let him do his job, basically. He ain't going to do that to Jim Chaney. Jim Chaney didn't leave a comfortable situation at Georgia to come over here and have his offense dictated to him by Jeremy Pruitt. I don't know if it's written into his contract specifically or if it's just an understanding, but Jim Chaney's not going to come here and have his play sheet taken away or anything like that. And I think that's a good thing because Jeremy Pruitt's a fine defensive coach. We're going to hire him to coach offense. So we'll see. We'll see. It's a big year for Pruitt and the new-look staff. Stay with us. The Drive continues. More of your phone calls coming up. We'll be right back.
The Drive.
The Drives podcast is presented by Disability Advantage Group. Need help applying for Social Security disability benefits? One call does it all. Call Disability Advantage Group today at 865-566-0800. Applying for disability can be very tedious. Having an experienced attorney on your side makes it easy. Call Disability Advantage Group, 865-566-0800, or visit online at dag-us.com. Portion of the show today brought to you by East 10 Warehouse and Distribution. East 10 Warehouse and Distribution handles all of your logistical needs. And oh, don't we all have logistical needs? East 10 Warehouse and Distribution has over 110,000 square feet of warehouse space. Well, we don't all have that. They'll get your shipment delivered with the best possible rate, and they offer cross-docking if you just need a place to store your stuff. 865-521-6143 is their phone number. Call today, East 10 Warehouse and Distribution, 865-521-6143, online at east10warehouse.com. Let's get back to the phones. John Tweet is next. Hello, Tweet.
What do you say, boy?
Yes.
I would assume if my car is crashed in the middle of the interstate, the last thing I'm doing is staying inside of said car and getting out of it as safely as possible and getting off to the side of the road.
That's where technically you'd be wrong. I mean, unless your car's just like smoking around fire, they actually tell you to stay in your vehicle. If you're in the middle of the interstate, especially if it's dark, you don't ever get out.
You're saying that the dead middle of the road inside a car is safer than the side of the road?
No.
Off in the ditch somewhere?
No. That's not what I said, John. I said
it's not.
I'm saying if you've crashed, your car's broken down in the middle of the interstate, as long as the car's not on fire, it's a hell of a lot safer to be inside the car than to be standing outside of it.
I know, obviously not standing outside of it beside it in the middle of the road. Well,
apparently this guy was.
Golly, that's a bad way to go. Let's put it that way. On to I think Phil was talking about UNC the entire year. I have a guy in my office that's a pretty big UNC fan. I think they turned the ball over quite a bit. He doesn't seem to think they're a particularly good basketball team.
Not by North Carolina standards.
I mean, Luke May's been there for, this is his seventh.
Somebody made a good point last night. If Grant Williams comes back, is that the way the rest of the country is going to look at him, the way we look at Luke May? I mean, it seems like he played with Jordan.
Can you guys see Grant? I cannot see Grant going to the NBA early. Can you?
I don't know enough about it, man. It's the experts seem to think that if he feels like he's guaranteed of being a first-round pick, then he would be crazy not to go. So,
I would tend to agree right there, but would you tend to put him as a first-round? Well, I mean, I don't know enough about NBA basketball, but I can't see it.
The Ringer had a list of the top, I want to say, 11 prospects, regardless of position for the draft, and Grant was number 9 yesterday. So,
I mean,
they seem to like his potential.
I guess just, and I'm not trying to dog out Grant. He's just a hard person to place in that league. You know, he's not.
Yeah. Well, he's going to have to develop a really good 3-point shot. And
he's not a pace and space guy. It's not like he's out running in transit. I mean, he's not particularly quick, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's not an elite athlete like when you think of NBA guys putting it on the floor and getting to the hoop. Like, it doesn't seem like that would be his strength. But we have seen him bring the ball up the court and look pretty comfortable doing it throughout his career. We have seen him step out, and he's got a nice-looking shot. It's just not a focal point of our offense. It seems like if he goes to a team and they say, listen, this is what you're going to have to do, we all know the kid's work ethic. It seems like he would probably do those things.
Yeah, I'm not trying to begrudge him.
Sure.
I just think it would be a hard place to place him. You're not playing down but guard in that league. He's not. I mean, you see him guarding and beat down low or going against somebody like that.
No, I mean, he would have to transform himself into, you know, that P.J. Tucker guy who played for Barnes 15 years ago is still in the league, plays for the Rockets, you know?
Who else? Aldridge is still playing, is he not?
Well, I mean,
LaMarcus Aldridge?
6'11", and just, I mean, he's huge. So I don't know if that's a great comparison. But, yeah, I mean, you get in, you find your niche. You know, Chuck Hayes is another guy who is a 6'6", power forward in the SEC, who played for a long time in the NBA. Grant's a much better offensive player than he ever was. So
it's just maybe you're more critical of the guys because, you know what I mean, you see them night in, night out, and you're like, I just don't see it. But I mean, if he goes, he goes. But if he does come back next year and you get James and Phil's talking about another couple guys, I mean, you shouldn't really have a big drop-off. I mean, you might be able to trade Admiral and Josiah James one for one. You might even pick up a little offensively. I don't know enough about the kid, and I guess we'll see when he gets here next year. But, I mean, anyways, boys, I ain't got much today. I was just curious about why I would stay in my car if it's fresh in the middle. I figure I'd be letting have a better chance of the ditch than I would in the middle of a slot car. Be good, boys.
Thank you, Tweet. I don't know. I didn't stop to really think about it. I guess, you don't want to be sitting there. You're kind of, you know, just in the middle of the interstate with cars zooming by. But
I mean, it was late at night. I don't know. I have always heard that. If the car's not on fire, it's at night, stay in your car. I don't know. I mean, unless there's no traffic coming, then by all means, yeah, the hell off the interstate. But you definitely don't stand outside your car.
No. And we don't know what – or if we do, I haven't heard what this guy was doing. Maybe was he trying to
– I didn't realize his car was in the middle of the interstate. I thought it was off – they'd gotten it pulled off to the side, and he was just standing, you know, accidentally stepped out in front of him.
I feel like if it were me, I would try and get to the side of the road. Be very careful about it, obviously, look for headlights. But, you know, I mean, this is in New York. It's not in New York City, but, like, it's 11 o'clock. There's still probably a fair amount of traffic. Like, it's going to be hard to pick your way over there.
Have you been to Syracuse?
I have not.
The guy was walking on the interstate.
Well, like he was.
There was no car involved. Is that what you're saying?
No. So the car was in the middle of the road. He got out, and I'm assuming was walking somewhere to. I was assuming the way I read it,
walking to like the next exit.
Try to get some help, I guess.
On the shoulder, not in a lane.
No.
Apparently, he got too close to a lane.
That's the way I took it. I mean, I don't know. I took it whenever I read it.
I remember back in my early 20s, I was in Atlanta, and we were driving, and a car had, like, stopped dead in the middle of the interstate down there in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And we were one of the first cars up on it, and we almost blasted them. Do you see out in California what happened last night? I think it was in California. Somebody basically just – I don't know if the other car stopped, too. But there was just this car doing donuts in the middle of the interstate. And
what?
It had traffic backed up for like 4 miles. He was in like one of those 350 Zs, and he was just smoking the tires.
I was banging 7-gram rocks.
It was something. It was all fun and games till the highway patrol showed up.
Yeah, with the guns drawn.
Billy clubs and tasers ready.
Excuse me, sir. Could you step out of the car, please? Could you step out of the car? Roger is next. Hello, Roger.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing this afternoon?
Doing well, man. How are you?
I'm fine. Bear, how you doing? How you doing, Bear?
I'm not doing too bad, Rog.
That's good. I just wanted to ask y'all a few questions. First of all, I ask you this question to y'all. I don't know if you can answer, if you can remember this or not. You remember Jerry Green's year? I just want to ask you a question about that. But I just want to ask first, do y'all remember the Jerry Green years when he was our remember that?
Oh yeah, remember him well.
Okay, that's why I asked you. Do you remember Tennessee? Remember Tennessee was number one in the country at all? Do you remember if it was
number one at all? No, they were
years?
Ranked pretty highly a number of times, but we were never number one under Jerry.
Okay. All right, and I just wanted to tell you, Russ, about the Oklahoma game. I think that's great. That's great to see playing Oklahoma. I just want to ask you, why do you think it's a bad thing for Oklahoma, Russell? That's a good thing.
I don't know, because I'm beaten down. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired in football, and it just seems like the last time I saw our football team, Vanderbilt was – absolutely bending us over a barrel and showing us the 50 states, and it's pretty hard for me to see us in just one short season going from that to being able to compete with what has been one of the three best programs in college football over the past 20 years.
So let's see
They might be ready to roll.
Better.
Who's the quarterback going to be? We're going up there with Garantano in his senior year. That's my question.
Yeah. And Jim Chaney, now he's a good offensive guy. So maybe with him being our offensive guy, maybe we'd be better.
It'll be interesting to see for sure. Raj, thanks for the phone call, man. Great to hear from you. We'll take a quick break. Back with more of your phone calls coming up.
The Drive.
The Drive continues. Fox Sports Knoxville, Fan Run Radio. And, look at the call log. We have a
long lost friend of the show.
You see, his Tar Heels had a big win last night.
And he surfaced.
Over the Dukies. And here's Penny. Calling into the Drive. What up, Penny?
Oh, please, man. We've had a lot of big wins this year that I haven't been able to call in yet.
It wasn't much bigger than last night. Beat number one.
I agree.
Your arch rival.
Hey, man. You know, I'm not taking a shot, Penny. When Carolina plays Duke, oh man, I put on my baby blue. I'm the biggest Carolina fan you ever saw when they played Duke.
You got those losers.
Yeah.
I can't stand Duke. Did you see where Coach K didn't even shake? He wouldn't even acknowledge Roy Williams.
No, I watched the game. They shook hands after it. I saw it.
Oh, man. There's a clip of where he wouldn't even acknowledge.
It was brief.
Yeah. To give him the Jim Schwartz.
I mean, they're gonna play again. Like, I think those guys have a healthy respect as far as I know, because they got to play again here in a week or two, right? I mean, if you're a Coach K, and I know, like, none of us have any sympathy for what do you call him? Bear, Rat Boy, I believe.
Rat Boy, like in the deranged chipmunk.
If you try to put yourself in his shoes, I mean, that's got to be like your world has come crashing down, right? You just lost your basketball cyborg, Zion Williamson.
You think Zion's the best player he's ever had at Duke? Just raw talent right out of the box, able to dominate.
I guess that remains to be seen.
I know
right?
A lot of people are going to disagree with me, but when I evaluate his basketball talent, I'm not talking – remember, athleticism and basketball talent, two different things.
Who was better than him at Duke their freshman year?
Cherokee Parks.
Shoot, what did Grant Hill do?
Yeah. He was pretty good.
And I also don't want to hear the excuse that Duke won because Zion Williams got hurt. Because how many McDonald's All-Americans does Duke have? They still had four more, and we only had two, one of which only played 11 minutes. So I don't want to hear it. And wasn't nobody giving us any praise or nobody was giving us any cushion when we were in the tournament about to win a national championship and Kendall Marshall got hurt. And nobody gives us, if he wouldn't have got hurt, then North Carolina probably would have won. So I don't want to hear it, Duke fans.
I mean, injuries are a part of the game. What's going to be interesting to see is now, what do the pollsters in the committee do with this, especially if he shuts it down, especially if he says, I'm not coming back, which I don't know. We don't know that that's what he's going to do, but he's obviously out for a couple of games here. How does the committee and the pollsters take that into account? How far are they going to flip? Tennessee loses one game, and granted, we got our heads bashed in pretty good the other week, but we dropped five spots all the way down to number five, four spots, I guess, and like Duke's number one and media darlings and all this. How far are they going to drop, especially if they don't have their main dude?
Well, let me bring this up then, because I know that you guys don't have the propensity. I'm not going to say propensity. I think that just because of where your eyesight is, you probably don't know or haven't noticed to bring this up. Who has Tennessee played since they played Gonzaga and since they are before they lost to Kentucky?
No, I mean, we know that. Perfectly well. I mean, the strength of schedule is not working in Tennessee's favor, and the schedule's backloaded. It's going to come up a little bit, but it hasn't been a murderer's row. I don't think any Tennessee fans shine away from that.
Right. So, but what I do continue to hear is how far they fell. But I mean, that plays a factor when you play in the best basketball conference as the ACC, and you lose like Duke lost. They got waxed by North Carolina, but they're probably not going to fall as far because, I mean, look who they play. We've got a lot of ranked teams in the top 25, and that matters. That's going to matter.
But my question is, if your best player is gone, and we've seen this happen a number of times. You mentioned Kendall Marshall, Kenyon Martin, for Cincinnati back in the day, Purdue when they lost Robbie Hummel right before the tournament. I mean, it kills your chances. Like, you lose your best player, you're not a great team anymore. And I think at some point the committee has to take that into account and say, we can't just give you a number one seed or maybe even a two seed based on what you did the entire season with the guy that you don't have anymore.
Yeah, but to Duke's credit, they still have four McDonald's All-Americans on their team. So you can't just completely discredit them. Now, if they only had two McDonald's All-Americans and now they only have one, okay, you may have a point. Maybe the committee needs to rethink this and think about something else. But they still have, like, four more McDonald's.
Yeah, I mean, they have a talented roster. There's no doubt about it. But there's also no doubt that they have built their team and the way they play completely around Zion Williamson. Right, I mean, they just have, like, he's their go-to guy, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Carolina. Again, I watched every moment of it. It was fantastic. I love watching Duke get smacked around.
I want to answer that, stating if Coach K is as great as he is, and since Roy Williams has been at North Carolina, Roy Williams has outperformed Coach K with less talent. People keep talking about Zion Williamson. Last year, Duke had allegedly a better team. And look what they did. So if Coach K is as great a coach as everybody keeps saying that he is, and I'm not saying that he's not a great coach, but I don't particularly believe that he's as great a coach as everybody says that he is.
Penny.
He be able to get it done with four All-Americans or McDonald's All-Americans on his team?
Hey, Penny, I got to jump in. Combination of things. You're breaking up, and we are out of time. Hour number three of The Drive. Coming up, Grant Ramey, GoVols 247, going to join us to talk Tennessee basketball coming up next here on The Drive. The Drive.